When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey there, and welcome back to Holding Space Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Cassidy, and today we are talking about sex, baby. But after you've had a baby, where do we even start? Like intimacy, once you are in the trenches of parenting and you feel like you're two ships passing in the night and you're trying to find that bridge back to connection to each other, but like there's no room for spontaneity, it feels like, or freedom to build that desire for intimacy. Maybe you have different sex drives after becoming parents. There's just a lot of roadblocks, and I am so thrilled to be sharing my conversation today with all of you. We've got New York Times best-selling authors Vanessa and Xander Marin. She's a sex therapist with 20 years of experience. He's a regular dude. And together they wrote Sex Talks, the five conversations that will transform your love life. They are so open, sometimes shockingly so. I think especially when you consider the lack of sex education that so many of us received. They are funny. I think you're going to be calling them your new besties by the end of this conversation. I adore them. Personally, Vanessa and I have way too much fun sending voice notes back to each other daily about our most recent spicy fantasy fiction novel that we're reading. And we will also talk a little bit about some of our favorites and a little bit about that in this episode as well. But what we're really trying to support you all with today is getting started. They're going to walk us through the five conversations that they lay out in their book, but really honing in on what these conversations can look like for parents. I'm so glad you're here. Let's dive in. You're listening to Holding Space Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Cassidy Freitas. I'm a mom to three and licensed marriage and family therapist. I'm really glad that you took the time to hold space for you by tuning in to today's episode. My hope with this podcast is to share conversations with experts from around the world and parents who've been through it so that maybe you feel a little less alone in your experiences and the messy side of being a parent and being a human, and so that you can walk away with supportive steps for what to do next. Listening to this episode is not a substitute for seeking support from a professional in your area. I believe that holding space and offering presence to both ourselves and others is truly one of the most meaningful ways that we can express care. And you are so deserving of that care. All right, are you ready? Let's dive in. All right, so I've already introed the two of you, but now that I have you here and seeing your beautiful faces, I would love to introduce the Holding Space Podcast listener to New York Times best-selling authors, Vanessa and Xander. How are you guys doing today? What does it feel like to be New York Times best-selling authors? And just thank you for making the time.
Oh, I'm so glad you shared us with that title. I am not sick of that title at all. I don't think I ever will be. It feels very good to hear. And yeah, we're very excited to be here and talk about that New York Times bestselling book and some of the ways that we think it's really going to help change people's lives.
Sex talks. I got an advanced copy. Now it's out for the world. So, by the end of this, when the listener is like, all right, I need more, go check out the link in the show notes where you can learn more about Vanessa and Xander's best-selling book, instant best-selling book. Whew. All right. So let's dive in. First, I want to hear about why changing the landscape for sex education is your passion for both of you?
So my initial interest in becoming a sex therapist really stemmed from my parents' attempt at giving me the talk. Like most of us, it did not go well. It was very awkward. And I didn't actually get any helpful, useful information out of that conversation. It really wasn't a conversation at all.
Yeah, I got a book. I got a book. And probably like a very like popular book back in the like, was it, would it have been the 90s? Like, you know, here's a book and like, close your door and read it. You know,
and I didn't even get a book. I have younger siblings, and they both got books. I was very jealous, but my version of the talk was literally just them saying, "If you have any questions about sex, you can ask us." And it was very clear, though, that what they were saying is, "Please do not ask us anything. We don't want to talk about it. Just let's pretend this never happened." And I did have a lot of questions. I had a lot of curiosities. I wanted to know things about sex and relationships. And so without that conversation and without any other conversations, all that I really had to go off of was TV and the movies. And I saw that
in Friends,
the perfect way that sex is always depicted on TV and the movies. And I felt like, well, that's what my sex life is supposed to look like. Once I started having sex, it was nothing like that, which really made me feel like something was wrong with me, with the relationships that I was in. And so that personal experience has really been the crux of why I want to help people have better experiences with sex.
Now, I also had a very awkward the talk with my parents, but I never thought that I was going to get into this as a career. You know, I did my own thing for the, you know, first many years of our relationship. I was in the consulting world. I worked in corporate for a tech company. And I just got kind of burned out doing that. And I was really trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And at the same time, Vanessa was starting to grow this business. So I quit my job and I started doing a couple things here and there to help Vanessa out, you know, like marketing and operations for her business. And I was like, oh, this is cool. Maybe I can, you know, I can be the COO of her business. And slowly but surely, Vanessa started asking me if I might want to get a little more involved in being the face of the business and saying stuff on social along with her. And I was really resistant to that at first because I was like, I don't have the education. I don't have the experience. You know, I had lived through Vanessa, you know, going to grad school, getting licensed as a psychotherapist. And I was like, I have none of that. Like, what are people going to want to hear from me?
And I kept telling him, I think that's exactly the point. Like, yes, I have all this training and all this experience in it, but we're also a real couple. We've been together for 15 years. We've had our own ups and downs in our sex life. And I think that's a valuable perspective for people to hear. The regular dude perspective.
Yeah. So Vanessa sneakily started to get me involved. She would be doing a story on Instagram and then she'd flip the phone around and be like, "Hey, Xander, what do you think about this?" And I started to realize that actually, you know, the stuff that I had to say was really resonating with people. People responded really well to like, okay, well, this is what the therapist is saying, but this is what, you know, the guy that isn't the therapist, this is how he deals with this. This is how he thinks about this. And I think it also really helped us just speak to couples because, you know, we are a couple ourselves, you know, so rather than, you know, Vanessa being like, as a therapist, here's how you do this. It's like, here's this couple who's been through a lot of stuff talking about how they do this together. And once I started realizing that I was making a real impact, I was like, wow, this is so much more of an impact than I was ever making in any of my other jobs. Like, this is pretty incredible. I want to be a part of this.
That's amazing. It's amazing. And I really do think, Xander, like a bridge that you bring that like adds so much to the overall education and messaging, and so many generations to come are going to be impacted by the work you guys are putting out there. And I'm so grateful as a human being and also as a parent. And I'd love to pick both of your brains about this piece, right? The identity of being a parent, because majority of the listeners here are parents. And I know that sex became so much more complicated after becoming parents for my husband and I. And so I'd love to hear from you. What are some of the struggles that you see that parents are reporting to you when it comes to intimacy and sex?
One of the biggest problems is that parents just aren't prepared. Just like I was talking about my lack of sex education and how that impacted my sex life, I think most parents go into it being told you're going to have that 6-week checkup, and once they clear you, then all things are go and it's going to be back to normal, back to what it was before. And so a lot of parents really struggle with, well, what if I'm not ready at this magical 6-week timeline? What if I'm, you know, I'm feeling exhausted? We're feeling disconnected from each other. I have so much anxiety over being a parent. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm judging myself. We're arguing more. We're exhausted. We're, you know, sleep deprived and arguing more. And so there's just so much that can make that period of time feel really challenging. And it's even worsened by the fact that a lot of parents weren't prepared for it, didn't really understand how this was going to change their sex life.
Yeah, I think it's the combination of not being prepared and also not being very well equipped to communicate about what it's like when it doesn't go to expectations. Because I think when we're unprepared, it's easy to build up these expectations of what it's going to be like. Oh, it's just going to go back to normal. After 6 weeks, it's going to go back to normal. And then combined with, okay, it's not feeling like it's going back to normal. And, you know, one partner is having one experience, the other partner is having another experience.
And
you don't know how to communicate about that. And then all of a sudden, like, missing expectations can start to turn into resentment and stuff like that. And that's just a recipe for disaster.
It really is. I mean, when you think about just the impact of sleep deprivation, just to name one, which you've named, like, mm-hmm. The impact that that has on our ability to communicate effectively with whatever communication skills like we already had kind of going into it. And if this couple is parenting a child that they birthed, then it's very possible that the birthing partner could have experienced a traumatic birth or may have a different relationship now with their own body. And, you know, I know that for my husband with our first, he didn't go through birth, but he experienced depression after our first was born. And the impact that that had on his sex drive was something that was unexpected actually for us. Mm-hmm. And actually when I was ready, he wasn't. And so I think that, you know, it can go so many different ways and there can be so many barriers mm-hmm. to feeling like you can find each other again, and not even just through sex, but even just intimacy, right? And building that bridge back to each other can be so hard. And there's things that we may have valued as a couple that was a part of our connection, like spontaneity, right? That really supported our desire. And that was so hard to find again because there's so many blocks. Like, uh-huh. And I would love to hear some of your thoughts on actually coming back to your book, which I know is about these 5 conversations to support couples in beginning to talk about sex with each other, to building that bridge back to intimacy and connection. What are some ways in which we can actually start there as parents in whatever stage we're in, if we're finding it really hard to even broach the topic of intimacy and sex? What are some ways in which we can be having these conversations to find each other again? And maybe you can start with helping us understand what these conversations are and then what the connection is for parents specifically.
We wrote Sex Talks because we wanted to give couples a roadmap to talking about their sex lives, because we know, like, this is a challenging topic. We all know we should be talking about sex, but most of us really struggle with the, well, but what do I say? How do I say it? When do I say it? And so we wanted to get away from, you know, vague, unhelpful advice, like, just talk about it. We see that at the end of every article, right? and actually give specific conversations and a step-by-step process for having those conversations. So we picked the starting point. It was conversation number one is called acknowledgement. I think a lot of people think about talking about sex and they jump straight to, we have to start talking about all of our wildest fantasies and I have to tell my partner all the things that they do that I don't really love.
Or you jump in and start when you're in kind of a crisis moment, like say you're, 12 weeks after birth or something and things are not feeling the way they are before and there's all these mismatched expectations and all of a sudden it all comes boiling over. Like that's a really challenging place to have a first conversation. It's a lot better to try to do it in the path that we propose.
So we ease you into it with this acknowledgement conversation. And what this conversation is literally just getting comfortable with sex as a topic of conversation. So you're not trying to do anything in these conversations. You're not making any requests. You're not giving any feedback. You're not initiating sex, nothing. You're literally just getting comfortable with it as a topic of conversation. So one very practical thing that people can do after they listen to this podcast is just take a moment to think about one of your favorite sexual memories with your partner. And then at some point today, share that with them. So you can do it face to face if you want to. If you're feeling a little shy, you can do it over text. But all you want to do is just say something like, you know what popped into my head today? I was just thinking about that time that we went on that trip and we stayed at that hotel and fill in the blank. And I just wanted to share it with you. It was just fun thinking about that. It was a good memory. Don't do anything else, but just share that memory. So that just creates this positive foundation of communication, helps you realize we can talk about sex and it can feel fun and light and playful, not intimidating or scary.
So I know that one thing that will come up for clients and my husband and I have been there in different ways as well, is almost this, because maybe the expectations or the sex drive is at a very different level, like for each other, this like sort of fear of like, if I even like bring it up, that they're just going to immediately expect that that's where it's going. Like that's where the conversation's headed and I'm not there yet. And so I don't know, what are some ways to support that block or that piece of anxiety of like, I want to, but I'm like, I'm scared they're just going to jump a lot quicker like than I'm ready for.
The best thing you can do here is to talk about what your goals are and separate that from where you currently are. So if you have this conversation with your partner where it's just like, I'm not there, I don't want to have sex, I'm feeling disconnected, I don't like my body, like that's going to feel hard and heavy for both of you. But if you can acknowledge like, you know, I am in a tough place right now and I want to get to a place where it feels easier. I want to get to a place where we're connected again, where sex feels light and playful between the two of us. And I know I have some work to do and I have some, you know, some things that we can do together to get there. But you're just acknowledging what it is that you're working towards. Because the reality is that you and your partner are probably on pretty similar pages about what you want out of your sex life. And if we focus on that and working towards that, that can create more connection.
Yeah. And I think if you're having that conversation, you frame it in that way of, you know, I'm not there right now, but this is where I want to get to, then you can much more easily work in. And so therefore I want to be able to talk about sex with you. I want to be able to have, you know, non-sexual touch. I want to be able to have physical intimacy that maybe isn't sex yet. And I don't want it to immediately, the assumption to be that it immediately turns into sex. Like this is what I need to start working my way into that, because, you know, that's a much clearer message. Like, oh, this is how we work towards that shared end goal that we have, rather than it being like, I can't do this, I can't do this, I can't do that. That's, you know, then your partner just kind of hears like, oh, like they're just saying no.
So one of the big things that we hear from people all the time, and this usually comes up in male-female couples, and we'll hear this from the woman. She'll say, you know, if I even mention the word sex, my partner's pawing at me and he's trying to drag me into the bedroom. And like, so I just want to avoid it. But the thing is, if you don't talk about sex and it becomes this thing that only gets brought up every once in a while, your partner is going to want to like jump on those opportunities of, oh, maybe it's a possibility right now. Like, let me give it a try. And they, you know, they get excited and they have that like hounding you kind of energy. But if you talk about sex more regularly, that starts breaking the connection that anytime we talk about sex, it's an open door for you to go and start grabbing at me. And then helps you realize like, oh, okay, we can talk about it and have it just be the conversation. So if sex is a more frequent topic of conversation, you'll have less of those experiences of your partner kind of jumping on you.
Yeah. And I can speak from lived experience how everything that Vanessa and Xander are naming here is accurate, right? And I think that it's a way for the couple to begin to see this isn't like a you thing or me thing. Like this is like it's us against this exactly. problem, right? Or it's us working towards this actual shared goal. I love the way that you framed that. Okay. So acknowledgement. Then where do we go? Okay, before we get to our next conversation that you're going to be having with your partner, a word from our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Athletic Greens. I take AG1 every morning. It's part of my routine. I was really looking for a product that was all-encompassing, something that would support digestion, energy, and support my immune system. Enter the scene, AG1. So every morning I take a scoop and I mix it in with a glass of water. It's also really helpful in getting me to start off my day with some hydration. And I don't drink coffee. Caffeine has always made me a little jittery and I run on the anxious side and it doesn't help with that. And I find that AG1 gives me this boost of energy without the jitters, along with all the other nutritional benefits. If you're looking for an easier way to take supplements, Athletic Greens is giving you a free 1-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. Go to athleticgreens.com/holdingspace. That's athleticgreens.com/holdingspace. Check it out.
So the second conversation is the one that I think parents will benefit from the most, and that is connection. What do we need to feel close to each other? So I think a lot of people will see this book, Sex Talks, and think it's just about, you know, the physical act that we're doing with our body. But we really wanted to go deep with this book and get to the heart of what is causing disconnection, what is causing sex to feel so complicated between us. And so we wanted to start with emotional intimacy because the reality is so many couples, and especially parents, we're leading lives that are so busy, so overwhelming that we start to feel more like roommates rather than romantic partners. A lot of couples will tell us like, we actually just feel like ships passing in the night, like there's barely any connection. So if you don't feel connected to your partner and then you're climbing into bed at the end of the night, there's this sort of feeling of like, oh, that's you. Like we're sharing a bed together. And that's a really hard place to then get excited about being intimate with somebody. So instead, we wanted to focus on how can we stay connected to each other all throughout the day so that we don't feel like strangers to each other when we're crawling into bed. We actually feel excited about being intimate.
Yeah, I can, from personal experience once again, like, and just from hearing this every day from my clients, there's a, when we become parents, it can be really hard. We can feel very distanced from our sexual self, right? Like if I was breastfeeding, which I feel like my breasts are no longer something that I want to be touched in a way that is sexual. At the end of the day, I have been with my children all day and they've been hanging off me all day. And for some, if you, you know, feel like you identify as like the default parent role or you're carrying a lot of the mental load, just by the end of the day, the idea of like giving more of yourself, right? Which again, and even just that piece, right? I think there's stuff there to unpack because you know, for a lot, it's like, well, why is it just me giving of my body, right? Like where does my body receive, you know? But when we're so used to giving so much and we're so exhausted. And then there might be the thought of, well, I feel bad, and so this is just another thing to check off. Mm-hmm. And then you're maybe going through the motions, but you're not even mm-hmm. present. Or like, right, like, or you're just like, no, like my body's shut down, shut off, like don't even touch me, right? Mm-hmm. Then finding our – being able to have a conversation to actually find a way to feel connected again to ourselves, mm-hmm. to what we desire, to then also each other. And then that might not even look like just talking about what both of us need from like an intimacy standpoint, but it might also just look like, hey, I need you to do more. Or I need, you know, I would love to be able to like take a bath tonight and have you like do the bedtime routine mm-hmm. so I can have that space for myself. Or on like a bigger level, we need to find ways in which we're sharing this load more equally.
Yeah, we talk about a lot of those big topics. Like we talk about mental load. We talk about feeling touched out. We talk about sharing responsibilities, because these are very real things that impact intimacy. I think a lot of people don't realize how big of an impact that has. But yeah, if you feel like you have just another child and not a partner, like, why are you going to want to be intimate with that person at the end of the night?
Yeah, I think the other thing about connection is that a key part of this conversation is understanding what types of activities feel the most connecting to you and what types of activities or things feel the most connecting to your partner. I think a lot of us hear the word, oh, we need to have more connection, and you immediately go to, oh, that means we need to go out on a date night or something. And how are we supposed to do that when we're so busy, we don't have any childcare, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And the reality is, you know, you just described a bunch of ways that could help you feel connected. So if you're someone where you're like, oh, if I can see my partner jumping in and supporting me, or, you know, taking on a task while I can get some alone time, that actually is going to make me feel the most connected, because I can see that you're really my teammate, you know, as opposed to someone else who might be like, you know, oh, for me, physical touch is going to be the thing that makes me feel most connected. So just understanding what things feel the most connecting to you, being able to communicate that to your partner is so key, because very likely your partner is going to have different things that help them feel most connected. And so, yeah, if we understand that, then we can each give each other the type of connection that is going to, you know, get us there as, you know, as quick as possible. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, my husband last night, you know, took the youngest to get a bath without, there wasn't like a, do you need me to do this? It was just like, he made the decision. I didn't have to make another decision. Like, does she need to have her hair washed? He didn't ask, like, right. Just did it. And I was like, that is sexy. Like that is doing it for me. And then, you know, there were also seasons where my husband definitely is like a physical touch kind of guy. And after the babies were born, like there was a period of time where I was really touched out, especially from breastfeeding. And we had to get creative. Like, I know for him, like he really likes when I walk on his back, because it like cracks his back, and it's like a form of massage that doesn't require like a ton of like physical effort from me. But for me to even just be like, hey, babes, you want me to walk on your back? And like the fact that I would think of it, right? And then he'd be like, yeah. And it would just be this like moment of like touch that, I mean, maybe to someone who's not been in that season, it might be like, that's like, what? But like it was meaningful to him. And I knew that because of what he had expressed. And there were times where, you know, I didn't want to be touched in any way that felt sexual, but having him like brush my hair, like when I was, you know, very much in the trenches of postpartum, felt really connecting and like cared for in that way, you know. And and neither of those acts would lead to sex for a big chunk of time, but it felt like we're still like in this together, you know. You're still my guy and I'm still your girl.
Exactly. And it really is those little moments that can make such a big impact. I think it's really the effort that feels so meaningful to us. Like when we can see our partner making that effort and they're trying, even if it's something that takes 30 seconds, even if it's just a few hair brushes, like those things matter. And so that's what that chapter is all about, is finding those little things, the minimum effort for the maximum payout that can keep us feeling connected to each other, even on the hardest days.
Okay. So what's the next talk?
The next conversation is desire. What do we need to feel turned on and to get excited about being intimate? So it really flows from conversation two as well. Like, you know, when we're feeling that baseline level of emotional connection, it often feels easier to then get excited and in the mood about being in the mood to be intimate with each other. So this conversation, one of my favorite parts of it is the initiation styles. So we were kind of talking a bit about love languages type of thing in conversation two. And in conversation three, I made up this model about different ways that we like sex to be initiated. In my experience working with people, I found that there were different styles, different ways that people liked to be initiated. So a great one that comes up for a lot of parents is one called take care of me, where for you, just like you were saying, Cassidy, like when your partner is taking on responsibility, just doing things without being asked, handling stuff, letting you have a little bit of alone time, that feels so sexy to you. And so having these conversations about what kind of initiation you like is so valuable, because I bet if we asked your husband, do you think Cassidy would be super turned on by you giving your daughter a bath without asking, he'd probably say, no, like, no, that's not sexy. Like, she probably wants me to, like, you know, be super seductive and, you know, whatever. So it's just,
well, you know, because we read the book, actually, when he was taking her yesterday, he looked at me, he's like, I know. He's like, you didn't. He's like, I'm not even going to ask about the hair because I know what you like.
Yeah.
so because we've read the book, he does know.
That's awesome.
So yeah, being able for your partner to really be able to internalize, like, that actually works for my partner. That actually turns them on. It's so valuable.
Yeah, I think I know for me, that was one of the most transformative things in our relationship, was starting to really understand the ways that we are different in terms of how I like sex to be initiated with me versus how Vanessa likes sex to be initiated with her, or even, you know, back to the connection stuff, the little things that I can do for her that really, you know, ratchet up the connection between us. Because the reality is, when we don't know that stuff, we tend to just see the world through our own eyes and assume, you know, oh, this is what works for me, and therefore it must work for other people. And that's just why those conversations are so important, to first hear, oh, okay, this is what she's saying, and then to start doing that a couple of times and actually seeing the results, like, oh my God, this is really working. Honestly, for me, it took a couple of times to start to build that habit, because it was part of me that didn't believe it. I was like, how could this possibly turn you on? This doesn't turn me on at all. But, you know, after doing it over and over, then you're like, oh yeah, okay, I see how this is working. And then it just becomes second nature.
Yeah. And my husband has really upgraded from the good old, like, come behind you, hug you from behind, and just start humping you from behind, know, like, he's really upgraded. And what I love about your book is you named these things, like, named things that happen,
the random that would happen number. Behind. That's one.
Yeah. Like, right. You named these, and I loved it because it was something that we could, like, laugh about, but also, like, just was, like, in black and white named, like, this doesn't work for some people, and, like, it doesn't work for me, right? As a mom to three, my partner and I find that one of the biggest struggles we have faced in our relationship is navigating sharing responsibilities and the mental load. And I know that we're not alone, because this shows up with all of my clients, and in every podcast episode, the mental load of parenting shows up in some way or another. Enter the scene, Coexist. Coexist is the app that's revolutionizing how couples manage the mental load of household tasks and childcare. It's like having a personal assistant right in your pocket, helping you and your partner effortlessly share tasks, plan meals, collaborate on lists, and even give each other kudos along the way. Here's the cherry on top. For my amazing community, Coexist is offering an exclusive deal. Sign up for a 2-week free trial before June 15th, and you'll get 15% off the annual plan on iOS with the code DrCassidy15. So what are you waiting for? Really, take that first step towards a more harmonious home life today. Download Coexist on Android or iOS at getcoexist.com. The load in our home has been feeling a little bit lighter since downloading Coexist, and yours can feel lighter too when you download the Coexist app at getcoexist.com. Since becoming a parent and as I've gotten older, I've become a lot more mindful of the supplements and products that I use, and that's why I love Pieri. These are natural food supplements that I trust completely. Let's talk a bit about collagen. So collagen is so important for our bodies, but our natural production of it slows as we get older, so I've learned. And quality supplements support our muscle, bone, and joint health. Recently, I've been taking Pieri's CP1 Pure Collagen Peptides. It was number one out of 28 collagens tested by the Organic Consumers Association and Clean Label Project. There are enough hard decisions that we make every day as parents, and this makes Pieri an easy choice. See and feel the difference with Pieri. I know you'll love their supplements as much as I do. Pieri is offering my listeners an amazing deal, 20% off site-wide. Just go to my special URL, pieri.com/Dr. Cassidy, and use my promo code Dr. Cassidy. So go to PUORI.com/Dr. Cassidy. Don't miss out. Use promo code Dr. Cassidy at pieri.com/Dr. Cassidy. But you know what's so interesting though, actually, I will say is like now that I actually feel like we're more connected and he does get it, like if he, right, like, you know, comes up behind me and like is just squeezing a little bit, like sometimes I'm gonna like, you know, rub back because I'm like, I'm actually like, this is, I actually feel like you get it now. I feel like we're connected more now. And so I don't expect him to like, you know, be perfect at like always just you know, only communicating in these ways. Mm-hmm. Like there's more playfulness now.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. When we don't talk about sex, it feels serious and heavy and scary. But when you have these conversations and sex talks, it brings this lightness to your sex life. And this was something that we experienced ourselves too, like even, you know, working on this together. But yeah, there's this lightness to it where it doesn't feel like, you know, there are these perfect set of guidelines that you have to follow to have the perfect experience. Like you can just be so much sillier and more playful with each other. So I love that section that you're talking about. We have a page. It's like the worst initiation technique.
Yes.
Adam Humper, the boob honker.
For most people, yeah. We do pull this on Instagram and there are some people that go, hell no, I love that.
Yeah, I love the boob honker.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, if we can just laugh about it and be, you know, silly and goofy and then, yeah, sometimes, okay, sure, we're going to throw in a little boob honk, but we understand that we're doing it from a place of silliness. And so it actually feels connected.
But yeah. I think you just hit on a really interesting thing, Cassidy, which is that as we have more trust, as we have more connection, mm-hmm. as we, you know, continue to live through this stuff, some of these things can change. So by having these conversations, we're not saying, okay, the rules are written. These are the only ways that you're allowed to initiate. You know, this is how it's going to be for the rest of our lives. I think a lot of us are scared that that's how it's going to be. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we hesitate to have these because, you know, people are like, oh, I don't want to find out that the thing I'm doing doesn't work and that I actually have to do this completely different thing. Yeah. I don't want to do that for the rest of my life. And so we'd rather just not even know. But the reality is, it, you know, this is about, it's about figuring out what are the things that I need to do right now to get us to a more connected, you know, a better place. And once you really do get into that, into a place that feels really good, I mean, the reality is when you're having a lot of really great sex together, everything else in your life just feels a lot easier. And then all of a sudden, you know, you're like, okay, I could be into something a little different. Why not? Hey, boop honk. Like, okay, let's try that tonight.
The helicopter swing. Like,
no, totally. I mean, like I used to recoil and I have been known now to like hump him from behind a little bit, like when he's doing the dishes. Like, that's super sexy. Like, okay, so what's the next conversation?
The next conversation is pleasure. What do we each need to feel good and to have a satisfying experience? And so this one, you kind of started talking about it a little bit earlier in our conversation, where a lot of women view sex as something that they give to their partner. And it feels like another to-do list item. Oh, another person who's needing something else from me. And especially after giving birth, a lot of women are dealing with pain. Maybe there was trauma ongoing. And so that even further disconnects you from the actual experience of pleasure with sex. So there are so many people who are having sex that it's not particularly pleasurable. And this conversation loops straight back into conversation about desire, because if your experience of sex is not pleasurable, if it's all about your partner, there's nothing in it for you, it feels like something you have to give of yourself, why would you crave it? Why would you have this sky-high sex drive? It doesn't make any sense. So it's a great conversation to learn how to experience more pleasure during sex and also how to increase your sex drive if that's something that's been bothering you.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many clients, which is mostly women, moms, have shared with me, I've never had an orgasm, right? Like, or I don't orgasm through vaginal, like, intercourse, or like, it takes me so long to get there that, like, I don't, who has the time for that, you know? And then from so many discourses that they've been absorbing throughout their life, right? It's even the idea of asking for that or expecting that, like that you should experience pleasure during sex as well. And no matter how long it takes or no matter what, like what it takes to get both of you there, if that's something that you if that's something that you want, but I don't think that people even realize that that's something that they want because they haven't been given the roadmap for how to even have the conversation to figure out that it's something that they could want, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's why the book is so pivotal in this process. And I'd love to hear just maybe one message that you'd have for the listener who, when it comes to having an orgasm, it's just not something that they are used to experiencing or, gosh, even have experienced.
Well, first I want to normalize it because this is one of my areas of specialty. I've worked with thousands of women who have struggled with orgasm, and every single one of them feels like they must be the only woman in the world who's dealing with this. I even went through it myself. I really struggled to orgasm with a partner. I faked so many orgasms for so many years, and I felt like I must be the only person. Something's wrong with me. Something's horribly broken. So first, just want to share that you are absolutely not alone. It's so common. And one of the things that we talk about in the book is with male-female couples, the way that we see sex, the way that we're taught to believe sex should happen is very intercourse focused. Like we even use those words interchangeably, right? Like when I say we had sex, you think we had intercourse. Mm-hmm. But intercourse doesn't actually give a ton of stimulation to the most sensitive part of our bodies, which is the clitoris. And so the funny comparison that I love to make is like intercourse for a woman is like playing with a man's balls.
Which is pleasurable. I might even get hard if she does that, but I'm not going to stay hard for very long. I'm certainly not going to have an orgasm if that's the only stimulation I'm getting.
So it sounds ridiculous. You're like, yeah, why would we think, oh, I'll just play with his balls and that should be satisfying. He should love that experience. But that's the exact same thing that we do to women when we expect that women should orgasm from penetration alone. And so we have all these women out there feeling like something is horribly wrong with them and broken with them, when the reality is that you're just not getting stimulation of the most sensitive part of your body. So I think it's really helpful for couples to read that section together because it takes the shame away from it. There's no blame in it either. It's not like, oh, all these guys just don't know how to have sex correctly. You know, like it's very de-shaming for both partners.
Yeah.
But it teaches you how to have sex where you're really focusing on both of your bodies and the most sensitive parts of both of your bodies.
Yeah. And to be really clear, like we are not ever saying to men, like, you're doing this wrong. Like we've all been set up for failure mm-hmm. by the way that we've seen mm-hmm. sex portrayed, by the lack of real quality sex education that we get, you know, like in TV and the movies. I can think of so many examples of movies where there's dumb jokes like where's the clitoris? Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it's like men kind of, you're like, well, okay, that must not really be that important because it's kind of hidden. it's the butt of a joke. And we see sex portrayed in a way that's very intercourse centric. And, mm-hmm. you know, men are supposed to be really good at it. They're supposed to get a lot of experience. They're supposed to kind of give it to the partner. And, you know, the partner is supposed to enjoy it. And, you know, and Vanessa described, you know, a lot of people, you know, end up faking orgasms, and a lot of men end up getting incorrect messages about what's really working, mm-hmm. you know, positive feedback, but it's not really the right type of feedback. Mm-hmm. And yeah. So, you know, we all end up stuck in our ways about how we think it should work. And, you know, the whole point of this conversation is to try to reset those expectations, give, you know, more, you know, real information about what really works, and, you know, allow you to start trying to explore together. All right, let's try to find some new ways, you know, that we can combine with the old ways that are going to be really pleasurable for both of us.
So the practical thing with this conversation, if you're in a male-female pairing, is to make sure that you're paying plenty of attention to the clitoris when you're being intimate. Like, actually think of the clitoris like the penis. You know, would I expect that a penis would be enjoying this right. activity? You know, so the more clitoral stimulation that we can give, the better.
Mm. Okay, so this conversation is making me just think about all the messages, as you guys named, that we receive from movies, from like all around us, right? That make us feel like there's something wrong with us, right? As women, or give men messages that aren't accurate. And so I'm also, as a parent, and because there's parents listening, what are some ways that we can support the education of our children? I know this is a really big question. Like, how can we begin to support our kids so that they aren't having these same struggles years from now, decades from now, when they're in their 20s, 30s, 40s?
So the number one thing that you can do is to work on your own relationship with sex. Because it's so hard to have these conversations with your kids if you don't feel comfortable talking about it with your own partner, even acknowledging, you know, what it is that you guys do in the bedroom together. So, you know, I hope that a lot of parents feel inspired to pick up sex talks. Maybe even if you've been listening to this point and thinking, I don't know if I want to do it. Like, maybe it's doing it for your kid that gives that, you know, that final piece of motivation to do it. Because if you feel comfortable, confident with your relationship with sex, you have these great conversations with your partner, you are going to be in a totally different place to share this kind of stuff with your kids. Like, kids are so perceptive. They know when you're embarrassed about something, when there's shame about something, and they absorb those feelings. Mm-hmm. And so if we can get more comfortable with it, your kids are going to pick up on it as well.
I think a very specific message, you know, one that, you know, we end up sharing with a lot of adults on Instagram because people don't know this, is just that is the clitoris is the biological equivalent of the penis in terms of, you know, as a fetus is developing, mm-hmm. right? And so, like, just, you know, if your children, as they grow up, or when they're teenagers, as they're having, you know, as they're getting closer to, you know, being sexually active, I think understanding that is such a valuable thing, so that it's not like, oh, the clitoris is lesser than, or it's this mm-hmm, thing that's mm-hmm, the butt mm-hmm. of a lot of jokes. Like, no, like it is, it is the biological equivalent of the penis. It is just as important. And so, you know, and so understanding what it is that you need, you know, to feel good, is going to be so important so that you can communicate that eventually to a partner.
Yeah. And so when it comes to kids, you know, having, we talk about it as having the talk, right? But really the better thing to do is for this to be a series of conversations. And just like with conversation one, we want you to get comfortable acknowledging sex with your partner, having it be a comfortable topic of conversation. You want it to be the same with your kids. So it's, you're not putting you're not putting pressure on yourself to have this one perfect conversation with them.
Because you can't.
You can't. But instead, you're talking to them at different stages of their life about different age-appropriate information. So, you know, some of the earliest things that you can start with is the correct anatomical name for their body parts. So you're teaching them from an early age, like, those are body parts that are normal. It's nothing to be ashamed of. Here are the words we use for them. And then, you know, continue having conversations about different aspects of sex and sexuality as they get older.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that there's things even from like what you're saying very early on, right? So using the correct anatomical language for the different parts of their body, and also things like validating their feelings, right? Like if I validate my child's feelings, like this thing that you're feeling is real, right? And I still have boundaries around it, but like this thing that you're feeling in your body is real, or like you're the only one that knows in your body whether or not you're full or not, right? Like I'm not gonna just make you sit here and finish until you're like, right? Like you're the only one that knows in your body what it feels like. These sort of messages allows a child to turn inward to their experience, right? Of like, I'm the only one that knows, right? And so I can own that. It's real. And I get to communicate that. And it's safe for me to do that, right? And then, so like my 8-year-old, we recently had the first talk. But I know for a fact that it'll be many, many more because I've got an 11-year-old whom it's been a continuous conversation as she's gotten older. And, you know, I know for a fact that me doing my own work has made certain conversations so much more comfortable to be like, let's find a picture of like where the clitoris is. This is your pleasure center. This is like, this is something that you, talking about masturbation, this is something that you can, you get to explore for yourself to see what feels good, because that matters when you are with somebody that you feel safe with when you're ready to have sex, right? Yeah. Like, none of that was ever said to me, you know, like not from a parent and not from, you know, media, you know. And so just, you know, talking about that from when they're ready, and I have to be ready, right, in order to so openly have those conversations.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
All right. So we've done four, right? What's the last conversation?
The last conversation is exploration. What should we try next? So this conversation is all about trying new things in the bedroom. Research has shown that trying new things is the best way for us to feel that spark with our partner inside and outside of the bedroom. When we have new experiences together, we see our partner in a new light, we fall in love all over again, we get all those great hormones and neurotransmitters firing off in our brains. So the problem here, though, is a lot of people hear this thought of try new things in the bedroom. We've all heard this advice before, right? But a lot of us jump to extreme things like, oh, we've got to be having threesomes and tying each other up and hanging from the rafters and all kinds of stuff like that. And that, all those things are great. If you are into those and you want to explore them, great. But you can explore new things in the bedroom together in a way that feels easier and safe and exciting to you. So this is all about taking little baby steps and exploring what feels good and exciting and fun.
Mm. And, you know, this kind of brings up this a conversation of something that's really connected you and I, Vanessa, to each other. And I know Xander just listens in on our voice text back and forth on about this. But you know what's really actually supported me in doing that has been reading and like just exposure, right? Like exposure in a way that feels like safe and feels like just really enjoyable. Mm-hmm. And there are, you and I are both really into fantasy fiction, like romance, smutty sexy, spicy novels and series. And there's some of the, like, I really do think that after my third and having third children, getting back into reading and mm-hmm. some of these books, like, felt like it woke me back up in some ways. Yeah. Like, it was just this exposure to sex in a way that made me feel things again in my body and felt desire and also gave me other ideas of other things I'd be interested in, like once it did wake me up a little bit. Yeah. And so I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. Like, what are your thoughts about reading, like, spicy books, and where does it help? Where does it not always get it right? And, like, what role does it have?
Well, first of all, like, one of the things that we put into this conversation is literally a list, a huge menu of new things that you could try. Because a lot of us hear, okay, try new things, and then we feel self-conscious. I don't know. What are the options? I can't think of anything. Now I'm judging myself for not being creative. So we have a whole menu that you get to go through and say, like, oh yes, not into that one. Ooh, that one's a maybe. So we found,
or what's a butt plug? Yeah. You know, like, what are these things? Now I got to figure this out.
So I think that's the experience that you were having often from books, is like, oh, I didn't even know that was an option, but now I get to kind of play with, do I like that? Am I interested in that? Do I want to try that? So I think having that menu is a really, really beneficial thing for so many people.
I mean, I think that it was books that were the first to introduce clitoral stimulation during intercourse to me, you know, that's a thing, right? Like, and so, and that was years ago, but it was still like the first time that I was like, oh, that actually sounds really nice and makes sense. And, you know, my husband and I, we've only been with each other because we've been with each other since high school. And so we learned together, right? We didn't have any other partners to, like, you know, teach us things or to introduce things. And so the exposure, I guess it makes sense that, like, a lot of the exposure then for me would come through things I was reading.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And books in and of themselves can be great to get you fired up in the moment, just like you were talking about, that sense of, like, it woke me up. One thing that we also talk about in the book that we don't have the time to talk about today is, like, the different sex drive types, and responsive types are definitely going to benefit from reading spicy things that gives your body something to respond to wake up to. So when it comes to books, you have been my introduction to the world of smut. So I'm still newer in my journey. but I think that, you know, there are definite pros and cons to it. One of the challenges of books is that, just like TV and the movies, there is, you know, you see the same kind of depictions.
Parallel orgasm. They somehow spill over, right? The pleasure spills over at the same moment.
The heavy intercourse focus. I know I kept complaining to you that in ACOTAR there was no mention of the word clitoris. I kept waiting for
this. Is a court of thorns and roses for anyone who doesn't know the ACOTAR.
there was a mention of, like, the bundle of nerves at the apex of her thighs. So I'm like, okay, we're close, but not just say the word clitoris.
Right.
So sometimes I, as a sex therapist, sometimes I read these books and struggle with, like, oh, can we just a little bit different? But there were also wonderful mentions of, like, focusing on female pleasure, of stimulating the bundle of nerves, of oral sex, you know, that kind of stuff. So it was a mixed bag sometimes very great sex scenes and sometimes a little bit of challenges. But I think that's just can be valuable for you as the reader to identify as you're going along, like, oh, okay, that's that old familiar intercourse heavy thing. It's okay if I let myself get turned on by that, but just remind myself that might not necessarily be exactly how my sex life looks like.
Yeah, like we're you know, we mentioned, you know, it TV and the movies and, you know, and maybe books as well depict things in an unrealistic way, but we're never saying don't watch TV, don't watch the movies, don't read books. It's that you can't let these things be your only education for how sex works, because of course, you know, then you'll come away with a, you know, an idea that doesn't really match up with reality. But as long as you, you know, understand what is it that I really need to feel good, what is it that my partner needs, and making sure that you guys are actually doing that for each other. And I feel like, you know, these books giving you the language to talk about trying new things, or, you know, the list of things that we have, the sort of yes, no, maybe exercise that we guide you through in the fifth chapter, like that can feel really good to just be exposed to the idea of new things, talk through it a little bit, think about it. Like, you know, oftentimes just talking about something can be just as good as doing it in real life. Like the reality is you might not actually want to do it in real life. So just talking about it, thinking about it, you know, that can kind of fire up all those neurotransmitters and make you really feel like, you know, feel that spark, feel that novelty, even if you're not actually engaging in all those activities. Because that's what so many people think. Oh, we're telling you to try new things. I have to be super kinky. I have to do everything. And that couldn't be further from the truth. It's just like, what are the options? Let's talk through it. Let's see what kind of gets us fired up. And then let's, you know, go have sex and, you know, and enjoy it.
Yes, my husband definitely is a fan of of my reading hobby. And if anybody's listening and you want some recommendations, send me a DM, because this is like one of my favorite things to talk about. I will like give you the I'll give you the roadmap. Go read Sex Talks for the roadmap. And then if you just want like a fantasy fiction smut journey to like to, you know, feel things again, which I don't know. I think it just it really did play a role in like waking up to these parts of myself and feeling that again, and that bridged to then turning towards my partner, you know? And I think that I know that your book provides that in so many ways. And so thank you so much, Vanessa and Xander, for coming on. Where can people find you, connect with you? You've got an incredible podcast. You share so much valuable free information on social media every day. You have courses, you have your book. Tell us where we can go to find you.
If you want to check out Sex Talks, it's at sextalksbook.com, sextalksbook.com. We have links to all the major retailers. And if you just fill in your order information on that page, we will send you a free workbook that goes along with the book. It goes even more in depth. It's really fun. And then we are most active on Instagram. We're at Vanessa and Xander. That's Xander with an X. And we do stories every single day, talking about different topics, giving you conversation openers, making you laugh. We're very ridiculous on Instagram. So definitely would love to connect with any of your listeners there. Shoot us a DM. Let us know you found out about us through the podcast.
Yeah. And then we'd also love for you to follow our podcast, Pillow Talks. You can find it anywhere you get your podcasts. And then finally, all of our courses and guides are over at vmtherapy.com.
Amazing. I'll share links in the show notes so the listener can go right there to find the both of you and all of your incredible offerings. Again, thank you so much for coming on, Vanessa and Xander.
Thank you for having us. It's been such a fun conversation.
Yeah, thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. If you did, you might want to hit that subscribe button to be the first to know when future episodes air. And go and explore some of those past episodes. Maybe there's a topic in there that you've really been wanting to learn more about. You can learn more about my private practice as well as my parenting courses and workshops at the link in the show notes. You held space for yourself today. You carved out the time and you tuned in to this episode. I hope you take a moment to honor how meaningful that is. Yes, to me for sure, but also for you. Thank you for tuning in, and I'll catch you next time.